dragging, but I mean, there's some issues that I think that they probably don't need to come back to. One is, who is the committee job center?
That the duopoly is not necessarily going to reach a substantial decrease in cost to the consumer. Anybody disagree with that? That issue is kind of tough. I mean, we understand the background against which you decided to go to IFRCO. Then, obviously, there are a whole lot of stakeholders who want direct access to the network of IFRCO. And it is very clear from what Mr. Mashila and others say that the ICA doesn't allow for exclusivity and so on. Now, how are we going to deal with their concerns that they want direct access? Mr. Mandel?
Well, the question, they can't get direct access for as long as Infoco is not licensed.
Right.
So that's a non-issue.
Right.
It becomes an issue if Infoco is licensed. Now, what we argue is that, and particularly given this point that Dave raises around the fact that Infoco would have to make an investment in the IP layer first before anyway we were able to sell to Infoco not at all on the other side. There is also that other added issue which makes it practically, it would be impossible to sell to anyone but via the Layertel system. So that's the other issue. So it's only when Infoco is licensed. In our heads, in at least from a company and a shareholder perspective, and only if, as a sole agent, to just use last week's analogy, Infoco, Layertel acted against the intentions of the spirit, then we would have no obligation, and I imagine that then everyone can go to his house as well, and say that. Because the exclusivity, as I understand it, there's the definition of exclusivity, which is not allowed in the ECA, and the regulator can correct me if I'm wrong, is that we are not at liberty to deny anyone access. We have to sell to everyone. Yeah. That's the point. So Layertel would not be at liberty to deny anyone access, even if the commercial exclusivity, marketing exclusivity continues. They would be compelled to sell to anyone who approached them to buy capacity. It is if they deny anyone for unreasonable reasons that obviously the exclusivity becomes starts acting against the intention of changing the structure of the market or getting cheaper broadband into the market.
So if I summarize you, you're saying that exclusivity only becomes an issue if Neotel refuses to sell to any and everybody who approaches them.
Yes.
And then they have recourse to ICASA.
Yeah. That and also if it sells at a price which is unreasonable.
Right. They can also go to ICASA.
They can go to ICASA. But for as long as Neotel sells at a price that is reasonable, that is justifiable based on what it is the transfer pricing between Infoco and Neotel, and that on the other side, anyone who approaches them, who is, because actually we are looking for wholesale customers. So you can't come and say that me and my little shop down the road want to connect, and so I want to use Infoco. You would normally never be a customer of ours, because we're a bulk services provider.
Yeah.
But if it's a large internet services provider which approaches them and raise that, that is the same raise issue.
Okay, anybody wants to comment on that? Committee members, first. Anybody else? Harris, you want to say anything? We call each other by first names, yeah? please.
Certainly, Infoco is not licensed. It is entitled to have a back-to-back agreement with the licensed entity.
Yeah.
The question of pricing and all that is not something that can be more or less seen from us as something that we can easily more or less say how much the price is. Because it's all the value of what the market will determine how much they sell at. There are of course tools that we use like price cap regulation, co-acam, etc. to find out what is the cost of providing the service and therefore agree what the pricing should be. Those are some of the tools that we may use because certainly in Infoco, if it is licensed, it becomes a wholesaler.
Yeah.
And of course, it needs to be open network provision. In other words, all other people who want to tap into that will have to tap into that because they will no longer be able to providing exclusively for commercial use. Only if they are not licensed can they have that agreement with the But the moment they get licensed, they can also be open up to everybody.
Okay, can I draw the can I just help you? Can I just get some clarity? Are we saying that the issue of exclusivity, arises only if NeoTel doesn't sell to any and everybody that approaches it? Or are we saying that the issue of exclusivity arises if somebody approaches InfraCo directly, not via NeoTel, and InfraCo says, no, you go through NeoTel. In which case does it arise?
As long as they are not licensed?
No, once they are licensed.
Once they are licensed, no, they would have to be provided to all other people.
So in other words, anybody else could go directly to InfraCo without having to go to the NeoTel. Okay. Once they get their license, they wholesale. That explains. All right, good. Anybody want to ask any questions here?
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I just want to... I want to know about the NeoTel after these 2 years, after InfraCo acquired the license. What is happening with the NeoTel? After InfraCo acquired the license from NeoTel, what will happen with the, what will be the role of the NeoTel? InfraCo
is not going to acquire the license from NeoTel. NeoTel has their own license. InfraCo would get a license from ICASA. The only entity that can give a license in the country is ICASA. So that's when so NeoTel would have a license and InfraCo would have a license. Let's go post exclusivity. On the other side, NeoTel would have access to InfraCo in exactly the same way that Telkom, in the same way that Didot has, the same way as any IP who was a bulk user.
But as I understand the question, if once InfraCo gets its license, what will happen to NeoTel? NeoTel will then, presumably, not have exclusive. Let's say control or access to InfraCo, and as Mr. Machila says, what will happen is people can go directly to InfraCo, it's a wholesaler now, and say, hey, we don't want to go via NeoTel. And NeoTel appreciates the implications of that. Okay. Good.
But can I also just ask further points? Because I think what NeoTel's current license is exactly the same, has the same conditions as the Telkom license. So in the conversion process, as everyone has to go through who has a grandfathered license, in the conversion process, NeoTel would then apply for two licenses, because if you recall, the agreement that we have with NeoTel is that we would only cover the long distance network, and we not in the metropolitan. So they need an infrastructure license initially for the metropolitan. But it's quite at their discretion as the company to decide that when the exclusivity agreement is ended, that they would rather also lay down fiber themselves and do infrastructure themselves. They're not in any way excluded from making an investment directly in fiber themselves. So that option still remains if they chose to invest directly in fiber themselves. So that doesn't kill, because they end up with two licenses, a services license as well as the as an infrastructure license. I'm not sure entirely what they call an infrastructure license going forward.
Can I raise a related question? Right? You see, if InfraCo is going to then provide services directly, once it's got the license and it's a wholesaler, to any provider that comes to it, it would need two licenses, then both licenses, the ECNS and the ECS, would that be correct? For it to do the latter thing, it would need an ECS as well, won't it? That's right. That's provided for in the
book.
Am I not correct that in this bill they only make provision for the one?
Yeah, that's providing network.
Well, right, sir.
Network services.
License. Yeah. It doesn't. It doesn't talk of ECS. Yes.
Provided for in the contract. when you now talk to the end user.
Yeah. That's right.
But if you read,
yes, I'm asking the yeah, I'm asking the question, why is it not there? Why are both licenses not there?
With respect, which is entitled to provide network services as well as communication services.
Yeah.
So they could be a competitor to New York City. But right now, I guess we don't have the long distance network. So that is why we are letting on to construct each has. But they are at liberty in the solutions to provide their long distance.
Okay, can I just take some clarity again? In this bill, there is only one license that is mentioned, is that correct, for Infracom? Is that correct? That's the ECNS one.
Well, we indicate that Infracom deemed to be licensed
is not
the number of licenses.
Okay.
But we do indicate the object of Infracom, whether that would require one or two licenses. The licensing would be the object of that.
All right. But there are also people in the submissions, who, in the public submissions, who say that you should be expressly setting out in the bill both types of licensing. What is your reply to that? Are there several people who said that? Can you help along? Can you help? Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. Am I right?
In-house joke. Let's put very quiet here. By the way, I spent a most boring Sunday reading all these submissions again.
I'm just so impressed with your command of all these.
No. It's a boring Sunday. Sorry? I can't even use my new cell phone, by the way. And yet I have talked about all these things.
There were, as you rightly said, there were comments as to the object of Infracom. Essentially, what we will be proposing some amendment to the wording on the object of Infracom. But in essence, what we want to secure is that Infracom provides broadband connectivity services through its long-distance network infrastructure. If, and for that purpose, we believe we would be needing both a network and a services license.
Why would you not say it in the book? There's no need for it. Is that your point?
Well, we haven't yet discussed it.
But you can be mull over that. Can we come back to that? Eric, can you note that? Okay, so we'll give you some time to come back on.
Okay. We didn't want to be, just to be short on that, we didn't want to be prescriptive to ICASA. We wanted to determine the objectives of Infracom and then fit into the ECA structure in terms of what type of license.
So ICASA will decide whether you need one or two. Okay.
Well, no, but we're going to, as Sandra was saying, because we were going with the deemed provision of the license. And in the deemed provision, the assumption that we were working on, it would be a license under the same conditions as Telkom and Leotan.
Yeah.
The way that it is now, where we're removing the deemed provision from the bill, means that we've got to come back and be a lot clearer on the objects of the company. That's firstly. Secondly, I think the principle, I mean the issue of containing Infracom to a wholesale model is understood, because actually the worry that everyone is raising is that if Infracom is not in the wholesaler, you then face the real risk that Infracom suddenly switches up as a competitor of you when your services.
And are you sure you're in the right meeting? Well, I hope you can say. No, what I mean is stay till the bill is finished.
Yes, we will
say. I don't believe you, but let's give it a try. And then the third person from the that's the third person, and there's been now four from Parliament side. So nobody knows what happened the day before. For example, do you know what happened on Saturday night, Elva? When we were sitting here and discussing issues. Now, can you find Andrew Daniels the seat? He's the chief state law advisor and his team. Bonani, are you going to help? We're going to find some chairs. Sorry, go ahead.
So because of this, so what we now have to do, and so the clear question which we need to resolve is how in statute do you create a containment of what's integral because the wholesaler, when in truth in the act there isn't you either have services, you have the services or you have the network. But we need the services license because we provide a managed service. We don't just say this, you go sort yourself out. We provide, so we're responsible for quality of service and the rest of your life going forward. So one of the proposals that we need to resolve with DOC before we can come up straight with it on how we could provide a constraint on Interpol and give DOC as a policy department the right to list the lever. Because there isn't any other mechanism to do it. You either don't get the services license, or you get both the network license and the services license if you're going to be able to really intervene in the system. But the only way, and then find ways and means on ensuring that into the future, Infraco is a wholesale services provider, network services provider, basically.
So if I'm correct, you covered my second. I was going to ask them, there's some people who say you should put in the bill both types of licenses.
Mm.
And then there are others who say, no, restrict them to network service licenses only, not a communication service license, because then they're going to compete with us. Isn't that the argument of MTN, Cell C, and so on? Am I correct? Are we correct? I think on behalf of the committee as a whole, seeking clarity. Where are all these people? Money around the same issue.
Chief, listen, I just want to say something. Because we struggle with this now, it's the second meeting that we struggle with this licensing issue.
Oh, there's going to be, we've been struggling until the last day, yeah. We're only starting.
See, but we have all the experts, we have all the legal opinions and all the stakeholders. So we, as a committee, really have to swim all this way through the deep ocean. Why don't we get clarity and we come to the committee with, this is what they need, this is what should be approved. Otherwise, we still argue that this is a lot of, we need to do this, we think we should do this, for our opinion, we should have done that.
It is the function of the committee. As I said, if people get tired, they can leave. Yeah, but it is the function of the committee, where the executive has obviously failed, which we're going to write in our report, by the way. I'm being tough on this. You know, let me be frank. This committee, I think, will, as you disagree with, will have to actually say so. You know, it's an issue that we need to discuss with Parliament as a whole. The executive is required to consult fully with all stakeholders. We've constantly encouraged the executive since 1994. We have told the executive, as far as possible, you bring a bill to Parliament, government is also obliged to consult with civil society and stakeholders. When you bring a bill to us, that bill must be the outcome of the most concerted consultations with the widest range of stakeholders in civil society. That's why bills are gazetted by the executive. Where you cannot resolve issues at the level of executive, it comes to Parliament. Now, Parliament is the ultimate organ, money. It's in the Constitution and the rules. And if the executive cannot secure the consensus that's necessary or sort the issues out, all the stakeholders have a right to say the same things that they said to the executive. This is their Parliament, money. And this bill is a small bill compared to many bills that we've dealt with. And members have to be very patient, because as I said, we've agreed on sitting hours and nobody in the committee is required to be here. The subcommittee can sit. If people have got other responsibilities. But I think we are clear. We have agreed we are not passing this bill until we understand all the issues. Secondly, we are Parliament. Parliament is the organ of people's assembly. These people represent their constituencies. They have a right to come to Parliament and raise the issues again. We are independent of the executive. So the fact that BPE hasn't agreed or the minister hasn't agreed is not a yes or no. They will listen to their argument. We listen to the stakeholders. Moreover, what we have to be clear and fair to the Department of Health, it is a very intricate bill. It deals with two departments, the Department of Communications and the Department of Public, and then it also deals with ICASA. Then it deals with National Treasury. So we will have to manage the process here. There's no other terrain. That's our constitutional responsibility. But at the same time, Mani is right to say that what is coming out is very clear, that this bill should have actually, before it was brought to Parliament, sorted out some of these issues and secured a higher degree of consensus, not least within the executive. Manu, you're absolutely right as far as, but now that it hasn't happened, the options are we give them the bill back and say, come back next year, which none of us agrees on because we're urgent, bro. Or we sort it out here. But ultimately, you know what? We're not passing a bill that's going to be legally challenged, nor are we passing a bill that we don't fully understand. So please, members, let's not discuss that issue again. But Mali is right. I agree with him at that level. Comment for one?
Thanks. My view would be that because we were removing the team from now it won't be, in my view, for us to prescribe the type of election. Because the car passengers to exercise this mandate in terms of which license going to be in terms of the publishing we will provide. Now, I think we need to strike a balance there, because if you put it in the view that this is the type of license, and then submission are done to the car, and the car is another conclusion in terms of the type of license, then that might cause some challenges and so on. So, I'm not so sure how to crack. I'm sure maybe ICASA and the DTE, they can come with a creative way.
Yeah, we asked them to do that last week in your way. Yeah.
To do that, so that they will
and we've covered that. The Department of Supply,
there's two things. The one was, are we prescriptive, as you said, are we prescriptive in terms of the number of licenses? With, as colleague Kondwani has indicated, with the deemed license, we leave it to the regulator to determine that. But there was a second dimension to the comments received, which you had highlighted, i.e. giving, the question was raised, what do we mean by broadband access, and how far does that stretch? Now, the department will be putting forward wording, revised wording, with regard to section 4 of the bill regarding the main application of the principle, which we believe would address concerns as to how widely we define this aspect. In essence, what we will be putting forward is an emphasis on providing broadband connectivity services with the long-distance infrastructure and not necessarily the last mile. So, Dave Smith can add to that from a technical point of view, but we will be putting forward wording from an object of infrastructure that would give further detail and definition to what we mean by broadband.
So can we do that by Friday?
Yeah, we can do it now, or we can do it when we go.
Yeah, by Friday we'll start. Oh, okay, that's fine.
Just before we continue, I just want some clarification. In terms now, we've got a scenario where we discussed the dim license scenario and a scenario where Infraco is a subcontractor to Neotel, which is obviously not an option for now. And we raised this in the early days, I think second day of the public hearing, but we didn't go into this detail about the extension of license. And also I see that in section 6 of the ECA, it does give ICASA the provision to give license extension. And it's not limited to any certain type of services or networks according to section 6.2. So what does it prevent us from putting InfraCo as an exemption, as a special type, since it's an SOE, 100% owned, and it's fulfilling a special function?
I think Mr. Mishina must also respond from a regulator's point of view. A bland legal response is there's nothing preventing us from doing that. What you should consider, though, is that in the long term, the exemption does not necessarily give the regulator the same opportunity to set certain license terms and conditions, and that may not be in the public interest. So we don't, from a CDE perspective, we don't want to avoid necessarily license terms and conditions. We just want security of license. That's what we want. That's our objective. But I think it's the regulator who basically has to indicate whether why not in this case.
With regards to
license, you have to then consider yourself not provide the services for communication. You either start providing with the access network, then you can have the sense of distribution of the reselling business, but it's mainly to sell the watch. And I don't think that's intention of the so then you can talk about the intention. If the intention is to sell for that time, but if you want to sell, you know, the services, either from the whole system of yourself or the initial license. There is an independent chance that could be success because they are self-provided. They're doing this for the whole internal purpose. But if they have access to that, then they can come to agreement to prescribe that to see how they share the access to
so yeah. The problem is raising out the fact that the ultimate user of the bandwidth is going to be used for commercial purposes. That's why it cannot be used. That's why it doesn't qualify for exemption
for commercial purposes. Any other person that wants to sell, there will be wholesalers to sell to retail.
Yeah, so they cannot be exempted. Because you see, I see my notes here that you said, Mr. Paris, you said, ICASA is also empowered to exempt certain services from licensing in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also saw something on Sunday when I was reading through the bill, the Act. It says ICA cannot issue license exemptions in respect of activities that the ECA prescribes must be individual or class license. That's also in the Act, eh? But whether it is related to the earlier point, I don't know for now. But I think we are covered, eh?
Yeah,
and you cannot take that rule because, you know, the thing thought that struck them is why did they just do that? They realized that there must be a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So all you're doing as a committee is now publicly exposing the reason. We obviously thought all these people couldn't have, I mean, you know, the Act so well and others do, DOC, that was an option. Look, I don't have anything more on Neotel. Does anybody else have anything they want to raise? Can we just conclude then that we don't understand the issues fully, we have no position on the matter, we will do a bit more research and we will come back to you on Tuesday next week with our response to the committee. But we don't feel ready to say anything conclusive about this matter for now. Then on the page 24, there's nothing much there that we can raise. What does this mean, catalytic broadband capacity? What does catalytic mean?
No.
Means
it means it's
a technical term.
Yeah, no, it's just so big.
It's huge. Yeah,
that it
huge.
Catalyzes other activities.
Catalyze meaning stimulate.
Stimulate.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyone else have any questions on page 24 of the slide? Nope. Okay. Page 25. I see bullet 2 is yet another argument for why it should be a schedule. So you say it's a operating as a commercial enterprise, the dynamic, fast-paced industry. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's another reason. And you kindly asked us if we last question. That's very kind of you. Okay, so can we just deal with some issues that you haven't responded to very quickly? Now, what issues have they not responded to, members? Anybody wants to raise anything quickly?
Just
yeah, Mani?
Yeah,
do it now. That's the, now is not the time.
No,
yeah.
No.
Right, go ahead. Yeah, this is not the general part.
Maybe the first one is not applicable at this stage, but once the PCOM project from Asia will be finished in 2009 and the intra company line will be finished in the West Coast by 2010, after that, will private initiatives be allowed to compete for South Africa? For example, will they have an annual ride? If you take into account that all the space between them and high water tide belongs to the state, it is an enterprise. Will it be protected physically for infra company and the global private enterprise from competition being allowed? The second question is just to hear what happened to the finances. InfraCo received 627 million in March this year as a result of the amended budget for 2006. What happened to that 627 million? What's been done with that?
Okay, over to the department.
I imagine that the first question is not entirely ours to answer because it's a policy question. So I defer to ICASA and DOC. But from our perspective on that matter, is they should be in competition. Anyone should come in. If you go back to one of the first presentations that we made, where we indicated that the fundamental problem for South Africa is that we are underserved by cables. And therefore, because we are underserved by cables, it means that the pricing tends to reflect supply at the end of the day. So our view is the more the merrier, because the truth of the matter is, and that's the argument that we make, is that none of us sitting here have a fundamental understanding of what's the explosion on the other side when we genuinely put in broadband into the country. Our anticipation when you look at what's happened in other countries is that there are a lot of activities that you previously couldn't undertake that suddenly explode way out. So if we were to put in, if in the end, in fact, one of the things that InfraCore is doing is looking at the economics of when it is they anticipate in their models that the undersea cable would be fully utilized or not fully utilized, because our argument is that always the state must make investments in infrastructure so that there's always room for economic growth. So there needs to be some indicator either 50% capacity, what is regarded full utilization, and then the economic growth for the next investment. Our hope is that by the time we get to that point, there's so many cables around here that you don't need to make the investments anymore. So our sense as the country, but it's not our decision, it's the policy decision, and it's a regulatory decision. So from the perspective of the country,
the more the merrier. Does GOC want to say anything?
On the second question, I'll ask the chairperson of InfraCore or the CEO.
So the 6.7 was used specifically system for the assets that have been transferred into broadband infrastructure. And secondly, for the expenditure required to complete the network and to operationalize the network. And the expenditure in the second part is managed through the corporate governance processes of the Infraco board, which board members were nominated by the minister and appointed by the school.
Okay, in any case, when we look at the budget, we'll pursue it more vigorously. Now, on the issue of servitude expropriation powers, does anybody want to raise any issues there? Committee members? While members are thinking, can I just raise a few quick questions? One is the submission by various stakeholders that is not clear to extend the servitude. The parties reply to that?
Well, first of all, Chair, excuse me, let's keep in mind the rationale for the expropriation power. This is a specific intervention, which is very much related to time and cost ability to secure certain efficiencies. The ECA does provide for certain expropriation, but in relation to land reserved for public purposes, so it's access to land that has already been reserved for public purposes. What we are providing for in the Infraco Bill is to essentially provide a power to expropriate land that has not necessarily as yet been defined as land for public purposes. There's also no definition as yet of what such land would constitute. So it introduces an element of uncertainty to us, and we're only completing that gap or that loophole in order for us to have certainty in terms of executing expropriation powers. What is important to mention is that the principles that apply in terms of the process that needs to be followed, the compensation to be paid in the case of executing expropriation, corresponds with the latest due process and compensation principles in the expropriation law. It can only, the expropriation clause can only be executed once Interpol has actually provided evidence to the fact that it has been unable to secure access to land servitude in a normal commercial fashion in the time frame that is required. So this is not intended to be a superpower as such. It is intended to bring certainty as to Infraco's powers to access land for the purposes of rolling out infrastructure within the framework of due process and proper compensation as provided in the Constitution.
Yes, I heard you all right. Very quickly, Mike, on the same issue.
I think it's really totally unacceptable. If we ask something of public interest, taxpayer money, 627 million, and we get a reply at 1 minute, while the CEO and the managers of the Infraco is present, is it acceptable to this committee if they give us an answer of 1 minute on what happened to 627 million?
Don't
you think, Chair, that we should get more details? Peter? Chair, I think money mustn't be unfair now. I mean, that's not the purpose of this hearing today, to discuss those aspects of it. We are going to discuss, when they come with their annual reports within the next few weeks, we'll discuss the finances in depth, and then we must get a proper presentation on it.
There's also the budget to be... Yeah, look, Mari, let's be fair. It's not germane to the bill, but we will, in our report, be dealing with some financial. We're going to come to that towards the end. But to be fair, this is really not germane to the issues we are considering. And it will not be adequate if we had a budget hearing or annual report hearing. Obviously, it wouldn't, and you know that very well. I mean, we are quite rigorous and vigorous. We have 48-page reports and so on. So really, this wouldn't be acceptable to us. And I think they will know that by the time they appear before the committee. Let's move on. But financial issues, money are right, need to be addressed. And in our report to Parliament, we will in fact deal with that. As we will have to deal in some form with the... Can we explain to people there are some things we cannot put in the bill? But the report to Parliament will cover that. For example, the commercial agreement between Neotel and government, GPE and Infraco and so on. We will consult Parliament's lawyers and see what is appropriate for us to say without intruding on the free market and the right of people to negotiate legal contracts and what have you. But we think that finances too will be an issue we'll raise in our report. But for now, I think it's okay. Let's move on. Can you just finish this question around? Yeah, this question around that we just dealt with now is basically the department is saying that it's not correct to delete Section 8 of the bill, as I think Telkom suggested. Is that right? And also the ECA, those who have said of you who are here, that the ECA covers the rights to expropriation and all that. Why do you want to add further? Your argument is that there's a gap, and you're completing the gap. Right. Now, does anybody want to reply to that? First, committee members?
No, Jefferson, I don't understand what the concern is of those people who are objecting.
Yeah.
If the objectors say to us, look, we don't want Infraco to have this because it's negatively going to affect our business in the following way, I would understand. But I'm not sure what their concern is to the servitude and expropriation powers that's provided for this proposal.
Fine. Can you answer that? Those of you who made the submissions to us, you said, take Section 8 out. You said, hey, this special treatment is not fair. Hey, the ECA covers them. Right. Those of you who said it, can you reply? Where are you? It's fine, we're giving you a chance to reply. Not many committees do this. You come make your submission and you go home. you observe. We're telling you to reply. You don't engage with it, it's fine. Do they have no case? Can we drop that letter? We move on. You have no case, thank you. Why then do you think you have no case, by the way? I mean, you took a lot of my time. I had to read up on Sunday. I thought you had a case. I mean, it's not fair. You're eating into my family time. You have no case. Don't come to Parliament and raise it because you're giving me a chance to reply. And the Daniel? You know, we're telling them, they came and made the submission. The department's replying. We said, you guys come back, guys in the plural sense of the word. Suddenly they all... Yeah. You're going to play a new role shortly, I see in the paper. Is that right?
Yeah.
No, suddenly my antenna are very attuned, you know. I suddenly start reading everything. And after the 14th of September, hey, who cares? See, the issue is
on a point of order.
Yeah.
I don't think we're mislead one another. Infraco is not asking to operate without a license. It says until such time as the license is go through that process, it will be deemed or whatever now. The purpose is not that Infraco be permitted open ended operation without a license.
It's provision in the ETA license.
Can I just check? Firstly, when people are speaking in reply to something you have said, the obligation is of you to listen. So can I please, really? And frankly, I'm suffering here as a chairperson with a sprained ankle, by the way, that may also influence my mood and what I agree and disagree to. Fortunately, I'm a very weak chairperson because I can't do anything without the study group instructing. When I go to the toilet, I have to consult the ANC study group. So, you know, fortunately, there are more sober people here. But please, you know what, I'm suffering with an ankle and I really think that, you know, you should be sympathetic to the chair. I have to listen all the time. You don't have to listen all the time. Just listen when you've said something, when I alert you that somebody's going to reply. So, in short, the issue here is simple. It is that the department is saying that the stakeholders are saying delete Section 8, which means the extended expropriation powers, are wrong. Because, and also those who say the ECA covers them are wrong. Because you see, A, this is a strategic intervention. The implicit, I think, underpinning to that is that it can, as a strategic government intervention, have certain rights and privileges that maybe a private sector stakeholder is not entitled. Mani won't agree, you can see him raising his hackles there. But I think that's the argument. Is that correct? Am I interpreting you correctly?
Well, there are two sides to the argument here. One is, yes, it is a strategic intervention which is time sensitive. I think all the stakeholders in the industry can testify to the time and cost, financial costs involved in securing servitude and access to land. All that we're saying is that the ECA refers to access for public purposes. That hasn't been defined. It seems to be of uncertainty. We want to close that gap. We are not escaping compensation, rules of compensation mm-hmm. that apply generally in terms of expropriation. We're not escaping due process in doing that. But we are, what we do want to secure is that we are not hamstrung in rolling out the infrastructure that speaks to the purpose of Infraco, i.e. low-cost bulk service, broadband service provisioning. That's, if we don't want to have legislation and come back to this committee
yes,
in
yes.
18 months and say, we can't meet our mandate because we're hamstrung in terms of securing land to. And this is very real in this industry. I don't think it's such a special
yeah.
dispensation that we really
see. Sheila Paris, anything that's proposed here in the bill at the moment, is it inconsistent with the ECA?
Well, once an entity gets licensed
yeah.
by CASA,
yeah.
let's go to legal and the guidance.
Yeah. Yeah.
electronic communication facilities. And yeah. Hope to enter upon construction of lines across land and service.
What section is that of the book?
Chapter 4.
Yes.
Diagram of what needs to be done. And this is in terms of any entity that would have got a license for us to fulfill these requirements.
See, my direct question to you, if you can't answer it given who you are, meaning you have to be neutral or whatever, don't, but it will help the committee. Do you think that the ECA covers InfraCo, or do you think what the department is wanting to do in the bill is necessary?
I would want to find out what is it that is in here that's not covered, that they want to add on.
Okay, Mashila, your comment on this matter? Do you think it's necessary to have what we got in the bill, or do you think ECA covers it?
Yes, the ECA covers them. However, in the ECA, we don't have public entities. Maybe when you look at the DTE proposal, this is what happened in the proposal for cabinet, because that public entities is a process. Maybe we might need to look at those other aspects that are not
fine. Can I suggest a proposal, a way out? Sorry, Kevin, please.
No, Chair.
On this issue?
My understanding, Chair, initially was that there was the drop the link law.
Right.
You see, the difficult chairs that we go forward and
yeah.
If you stand that and correctly explain that they'll be using the new chair license and go until they do. So it means InfraCo technical does not have a license. Not licensed by the customer. Until that happens, then the ECA provision will kick in. Mm-hmm. When they are licensed, but now they are not licensed, how do they ensure that they do what they want to do as an entity? I think that's where the issue is.
If you are
able to read it, I don't know if I understand that.
Is that correct? That's a very good point, Korane. Can you advise the department a bit more? You were saving a lot of time. Now we understand what you're saying. It's for the interim period that they need that extended power. And maybe that's it. But can we get consensus amongst the stakeholders that are crucial here? DOT, ICASA, and it's on the formulation. Okay? Can you deal with this outside the meeting? And by next Tuesday, we must have a formulation. Because the week after that, we'll vote on this bill. Sorry, you want to say something?
Sorry, sir. I'm not talking about the issue was raised in the submission that we made to the committee. The issue tends to be in the fact that we take notes of the point raised by the member that if InfraCo is going to be a subcontractor to Neotel and deal with the Neotel TSTS license rights to roll out infrastructure, if you want to short circuit the process by granting InfraCo an exceptional right over and above what they have in terms of the ECA, that's going to favor InfraCo over other state offensive parties. That may cause some form of constitutional implications. So in the formulation of this particular issue, I think the committee has to consider the constitutional provisions of giving preferential treatment to InfraCo over other state enterprises in terms of the right to roll out infrastructure on an appropriation basis, which is different than other SOEs might have in that particular.
It's an interesting point. That means it's not about having advantages over the private sector. It's about having advantages over other sectors. That's the subtext of what you're saying, but I mean the text is that it's over SOEs. I mean we can see through that, yeah, but...
Okay, explain further. Why is it a problem?
Sorry, hang on. Can you explain further, Peter, what's...
The CEMPEC has licenses under the ECA, which will allow the public operator, for example, to roll out infrastructure and has over public land in terms of Section 23 of the ECA. CEMPEC is a wholly owned state enterprise. Now, if you want to license InfraCo at some point in the future after the 2-year period, and then during that time, InfraCo can go right over and above what CEMPEC has. There is
it's not a competitor to CEMPEC.
No, but it's a licensing for state of enterprise, and it's also a licensee under the ECA. So we're saying there has to be equitable.
No, I don't understand.
No, why?
Okay.
All right, can you? Do you want to say something? Oh, you do. Do you want to reply to that?
Well, no. I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, I suppose it's also just if that arises with a disorganized government. Now, I'm not going to say too much about that because CEMPEC has made its own presentation previously. One, number two, what you'd have to show is where the material disadvantage is to CEMPEC. I can see the you see, when for me this provision, I couldn't have put it better myself. You know, there's a problem in the meantime, before we are licensed, first of all. Secondly, we have fortuitously have responsibility for Transnet and for Eskom as well. And they have some pretty strong expropriation powers in there. And we're watching, in terms of the national rollout of the infrastructure, some of the difficulties that they are having in achieving the attainment of services. So on the one hand, yeah, maybe if you look at the ECA, if after we granted the license or whatever amendment comes into the ECA, you can bulk up the powers. In the interim, you don't have those powers. And in the meantime, you're actually trying to have a fast track in the rollout of the infrastructure. That's the intention. It's not to create any material disadvantage to anyone else who operates in the sector. But for us, because we already deal with other entities which are trying to use what are current powers that they have for expropriation, and they are having experienced real serious difficulties in acquiring them, we can't act oblivious to the fact that that's a real risk that exists in South Africa at this particular moment.
If I may respond, Chair, I mean, if you look at those SOEs as a primary asking that happen to be shareholders in there, but they don't have any competitors in their market. But if you're going to play in the electronic communication space, as in proposing a state-owned enterprise, you would have other competitors, both private and public. And in terms of the bill, the committee would seek to extend to Infoco rights over and above what other competitors in the sector,
you like that? Well, I think the final decision is going to be yours, because it's a policy decision at the end of the day. If you want to have broadband infrastructure rolled out quickly in the country, you've got to look at this provision in a serious light. If instead you want to be held ransom to the processes, then fine. You then exercise your prerogatives to decide that the powers of expropriation, as reflected in the ECA, are sufficient. However, you would have to find a mechanism for us to deal with the interim period, because well and good, Eskom and Transnet may have. But once Infoco is established, Eskom and Transnet are not shareholders of Infoco, and therefore the servitudes that are in Eskom and Transnet would not be servitudes that are Infoco, save for the servitudes that would go with where the FSN assets are currently located. I think in the end it's your decision. And the policy.
I think that's what they're sorry, Sam, you want to say.
Chair, I just wanted to emphasize the fact that Infoco is set up as a public entity with a statutory mandate, which is very distinct from any one of the other commercial players in this environment. That distinct mandate is also distinguished from the mandate of other state-owned enterprises playing in the telecommunications market. Finally, just to reiterate that the Sensec Act, the old Telecom Act, the Telecommunications Act, all have similar provisions to actually provide that leverage to the state-owned enterprise to have a catalytic impact. And that's the rationale from our perspective to this provision.
There's rumblings of discontent. If you want to reply, I think you're unhappy.
No, we'll take it up.
Okay. All right, so for now, that's where it ends. Can I suggest, am I correct in saying, I know the opposition parties don't agree, but let us be clear, and people can disagree with me if I'm misreading the mood of the, and the policy and philosophy of the ANC. I think that we agree with the DG, that in a context like we currently have, and it's been felt out on at least two occasions, and in one autumn school, remember? We haven't forgotten. I looked up all the notes on Sunday. You can tell while all of you were with your families what I was doing. But anyway, you know, we are clear on the need for Infoco. We're also clear that in the context that it arises, given its particular role and function, and given that it's state-owned, and given the fact that we have the cost of telephony that we have in telecommunications. Only this weekend there was yet another meeting of that International Advisory Council, and you can see in business reports, is it today or yesterday, I can't remember, what the president is saying on page one. You know, I really think that this committee would subscribe to the view that Infoco should have, where necessary, absolutely necessary, certain rights and privileges over other stakeholders in the market. But we can only do that in a way that is constitutionally sound, legally tenable, and recognizes whatever Kumisa and Kulwani and I may think, this is a free market economy. Okay? So we will sort this out within that framework. Is there anybody disagreeing with this? That is our view, isn't it?
You could have said it better if we spend the whole day trying to come up with a definition.
Oh. For once I'm told I'm not overwordy. It's a great day for me. Talk to
I hope it's recorded, Chester.
Yeah, so are we agreeing? So there's no need to discuss this thing if we agree. That's our view. It's a state-owned enterprise. In this particular context, we agree with the department. Right, okay, but we will give up. I know you don't agree, Bani. We can record your objection. You will bring me back to China. That's a good reply. Okay, finally then, from the notes that I've got here, there was somebody that asked whether we shouldn't, was it Neotel? I'm not sure, page 49 and 50. N must be Neotel. Who else is N here? Which other stakeholder? Anyway, need to clarify services. Need to clarify servitude. Is there a need to clarify servitude? Somebody said that in the public submissions. I'm just putting my notes together. I don't know who was it that said that.
Just adding to the debate you just had.
All right, nobody seems to remember that they said it, but it's fine. Even so, are you familiar with that submission?
Yes, I'm sure it's related to the transfer of the ESCOM and Transnet servitudes and access to those servitudes. By the way, this has already been agreed commercially in any case with both ESCOM and Transnet. This is just a statutory confirmation of that reality.
All right, then, Bukati, we will. What we're going to do is, you know, Eric, we're going to put each clause of the bill, as from Friday, from Tuesday the latest, each clause of the bill and all their submissions on the specific clauses. Okay, so then when we look at the clause, we'll say this is what you said. But there are several minor things like that, like the use of the word underserviced rather than underdeveloped to be consistent with the ECA. So when I looked at the ECA's definition of underserviced, maybe it's my subjective view, I just didn't think, well, I don't know, but let me not comment, right? It's not my area, but on the bill. Let me just say that my understanding as a politician about underdevelopment is that it's more comprehensive than underserviced. But at the same time, we don't want to introduce new terms. You know, I prefer the word underdeveloped actually than underserviced. But now you have to be consistent with that legislation, so maybe you stick with underserviced. Do you want to reply to that now?
Perhaps
Peter, you want to say something first?
No, I was just saying in terms of my understanding the ordinary English of underdeveloped and underserviced. You could have a very developed area, which is also underserviced.
Oh yes, good
so
point.
So you want to cater, essentially there is, I think from the start, I think it was a much nicer formulation, where you want to take affordable broadband throughout the country, all areas.
Yeah, you may be right actually. Can we just go to you?
Chair, I was going to respond generically, just to indicate to you, after your instruction, we've gone through
Okay, so we don't need to.
Alignment. Our intention is to go through it floor by floor with you on Friday.
Okay, alright, so we'll do that. So I won't bother the meeting, but except for one area, which affects workers and their rights and so on, so we have to raise this. It's a policy issue. Somebody says when you're transferring the staff from Transnet and ESCOM to Infraco, what does this mean now? All their benefits and so on in terms of the Labour Relations Act. But they actually want it in the bill. Do you reply to that? You don't need it.
No.
So yes, you don't need it. Yeah, so you need it. That's what I thought you might say. Okay. Who raises this? Are you here?
You have to comply with that.
You have to comply with that.
With every single transfer, state-owned assets, we've always complied with Section 197.
Okay, the people who raised it are not here. Okay, fine. Anybody else want to take up the argument? That falls away, right? Okay, then the rest of the issues I wanted to raise were actually issues about specific clauses that we can deal with in a more productive way by getting a text. And Eric will monitor that from our side and whoever else is available from Parliament's Law Advisors. But what we're going to do is break the key, then we're going to deal with the issues now. Firstly, licensing. Let's try to resolve that issue. Where are we going? Then the issue of the distinction between Fentech and Infraco. I don't think we need a study group meeting for that. The issues are very clear. And then we just deal with the conceptual issues and finalize them. First will be by quarter 1-1. And then we leave the outstanding issues till tomorrow. We're meeting at 9 o'clock for those of you who are late. So it's tea for 15 minutes. Thank you.
Now we're going to get to this.
Did it take us half an hour to get there?
That's not good. Why are you...
The second is actually a good news. I think you might know that in our committee we have two sections of power. We have the deputy chairperson of the Communist Party in this committee, and she's not the chair, which I am, as you know, and I am a mere shadow minister, which I got appointed last week for internal media in the central committee, as well as, you know, so I'm already a shadow minister. I don't know where money is, because if the SACP stands for election, and we win 2% of the vote,
with their own opinion on that. But in the end, what we had agreed with the COC and the CASA is that we would remove the feeding provision from the Act and would go instead with an amendment to the ECA which enables the feeding workers to fail. And that would be a process that COC are running with, which has already commenced at this stage.
So firstly, about process, where are we, and what is the content of the proposal? Oh, so once it's got the cabinet, you'll bring it to us.
Yes.
No, that's fine. But are you able to give us some broad sense where you think it's inappropriate at this stage?
We're
not going to bind you to anything. We just want to know, what do you think you should do?
The proposal that we have agreed among the parties, do you have any impression that we're able to have the minister and the regulator to license the public entities without necessarily following the existing rules that is in the Chapter 3? Currently, Chapter 3 set out processes and procedures for competition entities. Or all the registered parties who are applying for a license to follow a competitive process that will be described by the process. But there's no exclusion in terms of public entities that government may want a license in terms of that.
Yeah. Okay. Just a quick thing. Firstly, in the bill as I gather now, the earlier version of the word dean, here we don't have dean day, and I read carefully on Sunday, I noticed there's no dean day. Secondly, all these issues, you know, and I've got something like 12 pages of notes here. If you had told me last week
that only you can
that was going to be your solution, you should have saved me a lot of work. But I've got 12 pages of notes here. All of these issues presumably are addressed by that provision. Basically, explain the concept to us. It gives the minister. Well, what does it do exactly?
In terms of Section 5,
yeah.
5C, the individual license can be licensed by the CASA after the minister has issued a principal direction to CASA to issue an ITA.
Right.
So, it's a to apply.
Yeah.
So, what instead we are proposing a new insertion that will allow the minister to issue principal directions to ICASA to license a public entity and to further.
How do you think that meets all the challenges around this issue?
Essentially, the ECA, if you look at the license framework, talks to competitive licenses.
Yeah.
Right. So if that be the case, it helps with the strategic intervention plan included in the Act, so that then it's in a framework that this will come. In case we are asked under what framework the license is entity, then we can point out and say, this is the process in which this is being done. Because 5 6 of this, that is in pursuit of managed liberalization. So managed liberalization means the government should not be in the business of business. But then there is intervention that the government can provide, providing an infrastructure for competition in the downstream of the very chain.
Okay, anybody wants to say anything more before the committee members ask questions? No. Okay. I'm just not going to read this, right? It's notes from page 45 to 65 here. I'll just drop them. If everybody's fine, I'm going to waste your time reading them. I'm just struck by how simple the solution seems to be and why it befuddles me. We could not have thought of this before you came with this vote to Parliament. I'm being serious, people. Also, it's a lot of waste of time, actually. I'm being serious. It's a waste of time. I've spent about 6 hours, and after 6 hours, 3 hours, and I read through, even last time, how long did I spend with you over the phone? It's really an intrusion on time, really. Mm. Executive really has all the staff you have. Mm. We don't, you know. We've got huge other responsibilities, political as well, you know. It's really... I must say, something in our report we must say, it is unacceptable that these things could not have been resolved. The more I think about it, it's not about the intrusion of my political time, it is my personal time. The Sunday is often for many of us just family. But, you know, I've got actually 20 pages of notes here which fall away. No, I don't grow. You see, that's the whole point. If I'd grown intellectually, if my insight that I grew from the extensive reading of all these things helped me to grow as a person, hey, it's fine. What's it now? 4 hours at least, 3 to 4 hours of actually on licensing. That took up a lot of my time. So, those people who had all these objections, you are here, many of you, do you see, there's two issues here. One is, you say, A, you're going to challenge this thing in court, right? So how are you going to challenge this thing now in court? And B,
strategies now.
Now B, you know, maybe you can't challenge it in court and you're very unhappy about it. So if you're unhappy about it, there's nothing you can do besides form your own political party and contest the elections next time round. That's something I can understand you're unhappy about. But issues about legality. Let me put it this way. None of you is going to answer directly, I know. No, you'd be expected to. But is the current proposal, let's say, less unpalatable to you? Can I ask, where's all these people? I've got you down here. I've got page number in here. No, you all said these things. I read all your submissions. Right. Let me go on and on. Okay. What's TEC? Oh, Telcom. TEL. Where's Telcom? Yeah, is this less unpalatable to you?
No problem.
Oh, you have no problems, even more direct. Okay. Then who said what? Sometimes I haven't got, you can't tell a euro K, right? I haven't got your name here always. Page 4 of, where's LC, MTN, you all objected. Yeah. Is this less unpalatable to you?
No, the proposal.
Everybody.
We'll defer our comments until we get to see this after that.
Okay, no, that's fair.
Comments because they will be able to address it more comprehensively.
Right.
I think let's be clear on the position that we find.
Yeah.
If you and maybe it's useful that the competition commission, the economist for the competition commission is here, so you can help us come If you manage liberalization, it means that you open the market for private sector participation. It doesn't say that the state does not play at all.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist anywhere in the world where the state does not play.
Mm-hmm.
What is fair comment is an inefficiency. There is an inefficiency when the state crowds out private sector investment. What this investment, the intention is to crowd in private sector investment.
Mm-hmm.
By ensuring that the infrastructure, the basic infrastructure, is available at as cheap a price as it can, and it's two blue boards there available. That's one. Second, the position that we held last week, we didn't suddenly turn from saying that our preference, and we just say our first preference, was to go with the deemed license. Because if we went with the deemed license, it removes the risk of uncertainty that we're now facing, right? Because clearly, in the process that we now go through, before you can license InfraCode, you have to still go through another legislative process in another committee with public comments and public hearings and everything like that. My worry is not whether we will in the end get through. The problem is what is in the end. How long does that time take before you are able to get to a point where you have a license in InfraCode? Because I don't want you to lose the fact that once long as InfraCode is not licensed, we would not be able to sell directly to the market. So that risk still remains, and it remains to remain. So I wanted you to understand, Chair, it's not so much that we waste time. Our preference would have always been that. And I think it would have been DOC's preference if you go by the fact that the minister made in the speech that she would deem InfraCode to have a license. What we are now trying to do is to address the possibility of a legal challenge should the union have failed. And it's for that reason, actually, that we had asked the state law advisors to actually look at, because if you recall last time when this issue of union came up, there were people who were arguing that it means grandfathering as opposed to the state deciding that it will provide a license for a particular entity. That, for us, is on the back of the fact that on balance, it looks like going for a deemed provision would lock us into a long battle, as you then asked, is it challengeable? So no, at the time. So that you understand that first price will always be the one that minimizes it. Yeah. And so this is an alternative working on it that enables the DOC to have a process and the CASA to have a process with integrity. Because then the regulation, they would then be issuing the license subject to a complete act with all of the principles in one act. That was the one point. The second point related to, if you recall, what you were saying, the schedule amendment to the InfraCode of that very same provision so that you piggyback it to this process and get to the end. The firm view was that it was preferable that the amendment of the ECA takes place directly in the body of the ECA and not in another bill, which was really not directly associated with fair comment. And so it's for that reason that we walk away from a scheduled amendment to the ECA.
Yeah.
To the InfraCode.
Yeah. Brilliant, if you want to sit, there's a chair there, and there's another one there, if you want to. Comments, members? Go on.
No, sir. I think that he outlined the issue. Maybe to remain how fast we communicate in
English. Yeah, I was just going to come to that.
I know that the discussions are there, but you know, the admission part and other things and so on, to do that. But maybe I would say, maybe it's also going to serve us some time. Because you see, even if maybe we go with a human clause, if we are locked in a legal deadly against emerging making anything, if we are challenged, how long is going to take? You see, you've got entities who have the budget of $2 billion just for legal deadly, so you can be locked there for more than
many lawyers here, by the way.
So I'm saying maybe for now, or from our part, to manage the process in terms of the communication of Guantanamo so that that particular amendment is finalized. And also, I hope from the side of the department, they'll be able to talk to their counterparts, because you know that amendment must come via the other channels and so on, so that process is speed up again. Surely, Chair, we know that during that process, again, there'll be submissions and so on, but we think that it will be a very minor amendment which can be handled within the short space of time from that other part of the committee. I think it's better, although there are risks as the TV saying, but I think it would be better.
Yeah, this is what you want
to move to that direction than to be locked in a legal basis with a deeming clause and delay even more than, but currently can still have far more things done in the new tender arrangement and so on.
Okay, we'll come to those questions. That seems quite useful. Peter?
Yeah.
No, so we should just text those who take us to court, chairperson. Have a special text. But going this route doesn't stop Infraco from getting up and operating. It's not going to delay that process. It will delay its selling directly to the market. That's the only delay where it's going to be. Is that correct? But in terms of the agency license or Neotel, it will be able to get up and operate and sell through Neotel. Is that so?
Yeah.
No, our concern, I think our major concern is that we want to get Infraco up and running as soon as possible. That's what we want to do.
Look, the truth of the matter is, we have not signed a commercial agreement with Neotel yet that settles on the conditions of the subcontracts on the back of Neotel's license. It's still Neotel's license. So until we sign the commercial agreement with them between Infraco and Neotel, I'm not going to act like there isn't, right?
If Neotel says no, we don't want to sign a contract, then you have a problem.
No, you can't. Then there's a fundamental problem.
I will sort Neotel out there.
So that's the case. When I say so, if the commercial agreement is signed.
And we know if you go to Telkom, then we know then it's going to skyrocket the cost. We know that.
Just to emphasize what the DG said, yes, the subcontracting arrangement was no chance of possibility. But there are two parties to that arrangement. We can't instruct Neotel, it's Neotel's license. So, yes, it introduces an element of uncertainty risk to us. Sheila has indicated, we will, after Cabinet has looked at the proposed wording, we will bring it to this committee. But when we look at that wording at that point in time, please consider the fact that we need to provide the best security in terms of timing and guarantee, giving effect to license,
correct,
not considering whether there should be license.
Right.
And this is the wording that we tried to work at. Just to give the committee a sense of what is essential to us. We believe as a department, and keep in mind the state law advisors did certify the bill, and I'm glad to see that Mr. Daniels is here. Maybe he would like to give their view as well. But we are comfortable, supported by senior counsel's opinion, supported by the view of the state law advisors, that the risk of challenge is minimal. There's always a challenge. And my concern is that the marginal risk of challenge is taking over the whole debate. There's always in any legislation that you find there's always a risk of challenge. But in the end, I think the public desirability issue is going to be a matter of
is there a possibility? We don't need to get the answer now. Is there a possibility of us having a belts and braces approach where we do both? We keep deeming in the bill and provide for the members of the ECA. Until such time as the ECA thing kicks in, the thing is deemed and it operates with its own license.
I was also
going to
say, can I suggest, there are three different issues here. The one issue is, what is the content of what you're saying? The second issue is, how legal unchallengeability, and the third issue is process. When will you deliver? Now, I mean, people picking up on what I was, I noticed Comrade Wong nodding his head here, but actually, given the importance of this bill, given the need to pass it within 2 weeks, given all these things, it might be necessary to take all sorts of precautions. Now, obviously, we're hearing the department, and from what we can tell, the stakeholders are reasonably content with the proposal that you've come across here. I mean, one or two of them seem to be niggled a bit, and some don't want to speak, but hey, what can you do? This is Parliament. You don't raise it here. Where else are you going to raise it? You can come to me personally if you like, or to Comrade Wong, or to Comrade Colwan, if you feel more at ease. We would like to hear what you say. So that's not precluded. But I think people are reasonably okay with it, right? Neotel will come back to us later, but for the rest, you're okay with it. Then the second issue is, when you say you're okay with it, we don't preclude other people even, or yourself, maybe changing your mind and challenging it. So I think we should look at what people think. Thirdly, I think that on the issue of focus that Comrade Kolwane raised, and also we need to know what's going to be in the ETA Amendment Act. I just think we got here on Friday. I was just going to suggest one is we set up a subcommittee. We don't come back to this committee that actually does this thing outside of committee hours and finishes it quickly. What I would like to suggest, if Cabinet approves of it tomorrow, would there be a crisis if we said to you, we're going to meet at about 3 tomorrow? There's no sea language tomorrow. Is there sea language tomorrow?
No.
So can we meet here at 3 with that proposal? And let's hash out the issues. The subcommittee needs everybody. We just call it a subcommittee meeting. The press is here, you want to come. Simply go, well, you can't quote us on the street, right? I mean, to wriggle around the rules of Parliament, but you can't sit as a committee while the House is sitting. So we simply call it a subcommittee. But if all of you want to, it's the biggest subcommittee in the Parliament, you're welcome to come. So at 3 o'clock tomorrow, let's process the thing. Or we may have a closed meeting first. That's another option. But let's see how things go. You can contact the committee technically by around 1 tomorrow to find out whether it's an open meeting or not. But let's move on it tomorrow so we can talk about it.
The amendment is sitting in the Cabinet Committee tomorrow.
Well, and then the
full Cabinet next week. So
we can't act tomorrow.
No, not quite. Especially if it was an open meeting. If it was a closed meeting, it would be
We will look into that then. Yeah? Then if it's an open meeting, let's leave it out. And let's look at whether we can informally process what Cabinet has yet to speak to the minister and get all that. Okay?
Now, Chair, I thought it might be because all of these things, when we sort of like bandy about licenses and regulations and all of these, in the end, it's not legal, it's become legal. It's fundamental, it arises from economics. It's about dealing with market power in one way or the other. I thought it might be useful for the committee, at the end of the day, for the Competition Commission to just come and speak just briefly to the issue of what's the role of licensing.
Okay, can we do that?
Sure.
But before you do, can I just say one other thing? We asked the legal advisors to also prepare a submission for us, and I think they're not altogether complete, but they will make some comments as well, before we close on this matter. Okay.
Chair, you left also when we were at the hearing earlier on to reflect on some of the submissions that have been made by the other parties, and we kind of adopted a more overarching approach, so it wasn't clear to us when we should comment on each of the different slides that we went from DPE. So there are three issues we wanted to pick up on. And I'm not sure if now is the appropriate time to...
We asked you to make a written submission. Yeah, you got a text.
We've got
send it to our text. Okay, but for now, go ahead.
To talk to it briefly. I mean, one was dealing with the issue of whether we're going to end up with effective competition and competitive outcomes. And essentially, that's how we would look at the overall government objectives in terms of competitive outcomes. And the issues that were raised by DPE around a duopoly and what outcomes you have from a duopoly. And then the other issue was around state participation and the fact that the state participation doesn't mean that you have less competition in the market. In fact, you make further competition. And then the third issue was licensing. So with your permission, I'll kind of briefly go through those, but I'll go through quite briefly. In terms of effective competition, I mean, I suppose this is reflecting back on the submission we made earlier. Just to reinforce that for us, structural approach that ensures competition is much better than post hoc actions to remedy anti-competitive behavior.
You're going too fast. Explain simply what you're saying.
We as a commission, we set up to deal with anti-competitive outcomes after the fact. Merger is there to try and prevent structural conditions arising. But in a situation where we're actually talking about structural conditions, we just want to reinforce that it's much better to have a competitive structure to start off with. And anything that ensures, whether it's a health and race type of approach, the kind of approach we follow in a sense, that ensures a great likelihood of competition is something that we really want the community to pay a lot of attention to. So in that context, both in terms of the operations of NeoCell, particularly Infraco's relationship to NeoCell, clearly NeoCell needs to be an effective competitor, but there also needs to be effective competition. Those two things are not the same in our view. Because when we evaluate company behavior in markets, we start from the premise that companies, private companies are profit maximizing. So it's not an ethical issue, it's a starting point, it's a starting premise here. So you may be an effective competitor, but you may not have effective competitive outcomes. Because it depends on how the firms go about behaving in the market, working at what their incentives are as a profit maximizing entity. And in that regard, the ruling of the tribunal, the competition tribunal, in the Telkom BCX merger, discusses quite a reasonable amount of length the nature of competitive behavior in this market. And in the first conversation earlier, the tribunal had released their decision, but they hadn't released the ruling. And the reasons for the ruling. And the reasons for the ruling were through the evidence that's been collected at great length through the hearing, a lot of it under oath. And so there's additional things that come out of that ruling which I think do bear on it. And the tribunal's view was, in their reasons, was that it's clear that DSL doesn't intend to or want to engage in price competition with Telkom. And that's perfectly understandable. From their perspective as a profit maximizing entity, that they've essentially stated, this is the tribunal's words, not my words, that DSL will cherry pick the most lucrative customers in the market.
Yeah.
Now, in the context of wanting to expand broadband access throughout the country, this is really crucial, of crucial importance. And there are several paragraphs in the ruling that will actually refer you to.
And you've got that in your text that you're going to give us.
In fact, the tribunal, one of the things they were worried about in the merger, that if the merger went ahead, it would actually make it easier for DSL and Telkom to cooperate. There'd be a greater coexistence of interest between DSL and Telkom. Now, that's perfectly understandable. If you've got a duopoly, it doesn't make sense to have a price war.
Yeah.
For either party, and DSL recognized that in the submissions that they made to the tribunal under DSL witness under cross examination went to that as well. And Telkom itself said that they were confident that after 5 years DSL wouldn't have more than 10% of the fixed line market, and this indeed is what DSL said itself as a target. But within that 10%, it's just the lucrative business. Large enterprise type of market that they're looking at, and that's what's contained in their marketing plans. Indeed, the tribunal's view was that Nearsell indicates they would stand shoulder to shoulder with Telkom and not engage in price competition at the infrastructure level. So I think it just reinforces what I think is common sense, and certainly how competition authorities would look at it, which is when you look at the incentives of a private entity in the situation, then they're looking at the interests of their shareholders to maximize profits, that you want to engage in price competition with the dominant player, you want to pick certain parts of the market. And it makes the transparency of the pricing, I think, from InfoPro to DSL, you know, very important, and it makes the conditions under which that exclusivity is maintained very important as well. So I think that's important evidence that bears to bring the bears on the position that's been taken by the public in terms of that. In terms of state participation, there seems to be a feeling that the state shouldn't be participating, but when you look at how Malaysia has developed its telecommunications market, or when you look at how China's developed its telecommunications market, the key thing is, under what incentives are those entities operating? And rivalry between state-owned enterprises and partly state-owned enterprises or private enterprises is a very, very important part of that dynamic. In fact, state entities having a clear mandate to go and provide competitive outcomes in the market is an important consideration. So the Competition Commission was certainly not against state-owned enterprises. In fact, quite the reverse, where there's competitive outcomes, we'd be looking at the impact of those state-owned enterprises in the market. And in that context, apart from Centec, the other state or enterprises that state has got shares in are private enterprises as far as the competition authorities. The state may have shareholdings in telecom, but the telecom is a private entity. I mean, mm-hmm. the tribunal didn't look at telecom as a payment enterprise. It's run for profit, the payment is a share, received dividends, but essentially it's a profit maximizing entity. And in the context of the developmental position of South Africa, I mean, when you're expanding infrastructure development, then state enterprises historically have played a very, very important role. One looks after you've established the infrastructure, you've rolled it out, you're in a different situation than you might privatize. But private entities, I mean, this is really kind of, from first principles of economics, private entities would underinvest and would look to price up where they could in terms of the rollout. The rollout would be much slower by private entities than where state enterprises play a crucial role. So I think it's important to look at what's the purpose here, or what are the objectives, and what objectives is the state enterprise operating. The second question there, obviously, is whether there's good governance mechanisms to make sure that the state enterprise is efficient and effective. That's a different question from what its primary intent and objectives are. I mean, in terms of licensing, we of course, we don't want to undermine any of the regulators. We regulate ourselves. And that goes without saying. We stand beside CASA in terms of that. However, we wouldn't want licensing to be used as a way of kind of legal gaming around government achieving objectives. I don't think any
regulation.
Using the tight legal definitions in a way which would enable legal challenges to be raised, as opposed to the objectives of the legislation, the objectives of the government. I mean, you know, whenever an act comes up, an our act, the good test case of that, clearly companies are going to use any particular provision of the act to their own advantage, and we start from that term. So welcome raises approach is the kind of approach that we would follow. I think we should say, you know, what are the objectives here? What's going to be attained? What will strengthen the regulator, but what will also not provide avenues to private players to pursue their interests? Because they will always pursue their interests. Of course, the legal advice they get would be, how can we pursue our interests with the legislation that we've got? And that's perfectly normal. But when you're tracking legislation, you need to start to take that into account. And the licensing shouldn't undermine the core objectives. Licensing is there as part of the core objectives of any piece of legislation. I'm putting in general terms because I'm not an expert on the Electronic Communications Act, but looking at the end point that we're seeking to attain rather than getting sidetracked in a way potentially by some of the ways in which the provisions might be used.
Okay, you're going to give us a pick. Sorry, you want to say something?
No, I just wanted to react to one of the statements, rather quite a few statements regarding the pricing and competition. Nautil's name was attributed to. I don't think Nautil ever says that there is not compete on price. So, but Nautil qualified it by saying that the competition is not going to be on price alone.
Yes.
That's number one. Number two, the proof of the pudding is that we have on certain contracts, including some of the key government contracts, where the minister concerned or the department concerned themselves, they've stated it publicly that over a 5-year period there is a 50-50% kind of a price gain over the incumbent. So I think the facts are there to be seen and proven, and that's exactly how the issues to be dealt with. And also the notion that there will be no competition as a result of this is also completely aside, because at least we have an alternative today. Both in terms of product solutions and otherwise. I just wanted to make that clear for everybody's understanding rather than, you know, taking it to be just a sweeping statement that Nautil would not be competing on price and so on and so on and so forth.
So it's good you've done that because it's a public domain and we're more or less concluding the dialogue. Although you said it would remain open for the last day, but that's fine. Even if you want to put that down on paper, because we're going to look more carefully at what we're going to get from the competition commission, a half a page or whatever, within a few days, because we really need to move fast. So by Monday or so, if you want to reply to it.
Chair, with your permission, if you can have a look at what exactly has been submitted, I mean, we can probably, you know, we would love to respond to that.
Yes,
I don't want this to
be
in the public domain. We are not going to be competing now. We have been saying price will not be the only issue. I mean, there's something called service, something called flexibility, there's something called contract, and so on and so forth.
The whole offering is based on 3 or 4 different pillars.
Yes.
It's not only about price.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we understand you. Is anyone else has a comment on what issues have been raised? Comment for one?
Sir, I fully understand and agree with some of the issues conversation commission has been raised in the department. But sir, I thought you went through a process and reached a particular way forward. To say let us look in terms of the recognition program that has been done or told to study to come back for us for reconsideration, for consideration and so on. Which means that that point does not say we can't go back to whatever we think will be done. So I'll say, Chair, maybe we need to pass this.
Yeah.
Because, and wait for that particular submission to come there.
Yeah.
Because you see, for me, Chair, why I was saying it is important to do the amendment to ECA, it is because if you do that, you solve this problem once and for all. Mm-hmm. Not in an intra-court, then mm-hmm. government comes with another idea, you want to do something, then you must go to that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's more important to do it in the ECA, so that we take this matter. Whatever strategic intervention the government will come with already for the clear how to keep that particular. So that was the view I was saying, maybe that would be the best. But I'm saying, Chair, maybe let us wait for the submission and look at it and engage on them.
Yeah. So it did I think the intention was to hear them, because partly it's patristic, a lot of the department saying, and it's coming from a relatively independent party. Also to say, look, partly when we process a panel, we try to speak. I mean, the bill is partly an outcome of a negotiated settlement. I mean, you know, you've got to try to carry as many stakeholders with you as possible, irrespective of whether they're legally challenged or not. That has been the approach of this committee. But also, we have to not take the DOC and DPE view, legal view, and even view of content as a way forward as necessarily the best. I mean, as Parliament, we have to decide for ourselves. Now, I'm going to ask the state law advisors to tell us how far they've got with helping us in respect of this licensing issue. Maybe the work's not complete, but Emma, there's not much time either. We have to vote on the committee on the 14th. So maybe you want to come in now and just help us, and then we have a subcommittee deal with the issues. But I think it's important that everybody hears it here, and where you've got views, you feed it in. So the subcommittee has got a firmer mandate or framework within which to operate. But we agree with you entirely from the day.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I need to apologize to you firstly that we don't have a legal opinion to you because when my office discussed the matter with me yesterday, they had prepared something, but I wasn't exactly certain what the nature of the inquiry was from you. And so I thought that I'd come here today and try and just get some clarity. But it seems to me that the problem arises around the dealing solution.
Yeah.
My colleague from DOC has pointed out that we did certify the legislation. And in certifying the legislation, we did look at all the tools. Tested it against the Constitution, tested it against other legislation, including the ECA, and tested it against international norms and standards and legislation and conventions and international agreements may apply. In our view, we are confident that the Beaming provision is constitutional. I need to say that. We are absolutely confident about it. We certified it, we took it into consideration, just as we are confident about the services and the appropriation for it in the bill. In fact, we had this dilemma when we certified the bill, Chairperson and members. We had this dilemma. We had to decide whether it was in fact a licensing issue that we were talking about, or were we in fact talking about an economic issue. And the lawyers around the table here will recall that in the Liquor Bill, the Constitutional Court was faced with the same dilemma. Because in the Liquor Bill case, while it doesn't seem to be relevant, the national government has intervened in what was essentially a Schedule 5 competence, and then said that it has the right to license in order to ensure uniformity. But at the Constitutional Court, it was raised by government whether we were in fact dealing with a licensing issue. And so the question that we asked ourselves, but which we didn't answer because we had not had an opportunity of discussing the matter fully with either DPE or the DOC, is if it was an economic matter or is it a licensing matter? And it would appear to me, or to us rather as an office, that in fact DPE and DOC have taken that into consideration. And right at the start of this meeting, when I was listening to it, and you mentioned the meeting with the President and the President's comments the other day, and it would appear to me that the DOC, in preparing this bill, had grappled with that issue as well, but nevertheless tried to accommodate the provisions of the EPA. Chairperson, I was interested in your saying you're the Shadow Minister for Internal Media in the Communist Party. So you of course know all about two-stage revolutionary strategy. And let me say to you about this. Firstly, in our view, in the view of government and executive, it is a revolutionary law. It is a revolutionary law. I don't need to read out to you and to show you the issues in this bill, which make it a revolutionary bill. Of course, they are counter-revolutionary as well.
Put your hands up, please.
Transparency. And the counter-revolutionaries want to make certain that we don't intrude on the turf too much in a way which impacts on the profit and that's the bottom line. But what is this got to do with you as a member of the Communist Party? We do have a two-phase approach to the matter. And it seems to me that the two-phase approach was used, in fact, to accommodate the CASA and the ECA, and of course to satisfy people who may raise issues about the constitutionality of the bill. In terms of Clause 6.1, of course we deem that Interco has a right. We deem. In other words, we're saying, okay, Interco, as from the transfer date, you have a license. But that license is as meaningless as you having a license or a car with no wheels. You can't drive that car. You can't drive that car. And so while Interco is deemed to have a license, there is nothing that Interco can do with that license. Until the provisions of Clause 6.2 are satisfied. Until the provisions of Clause 6.2 are satisfied. It would appear to us in our discussions with DPE and DOC that was the compromise. In other words, the Minister of Communications must, after consultation with the authority, and within 6 months after this transfer date, instruct Interco to do certain things. And that must then be published. The information must include the terms and conditions for the license contemplated in Section 8 of the Electronic Communications Act. So Section 8 of the Electronic Communications Act applies. In our view, Chairperson members of the colleagues, unless we've missed something, Interco can't do anything until 6.2 has been complied with. Now, of course, government is serious about complying with that provision, and as in fact in this bill, given the minister a fairly tight deadline of 6 months, say to the minister, within 6 months you must do the following. What it means is bring certainty to the market, it brings certainty to the industry, and it brings certainty to all of those who need to make certain that the provisions of 6.2 are complied with. There's going to be no delay. If the minister does not do that within 6 months, and while the term is after consultation with Interco, in my view, it should have been in consultation, but we don't need to worry about it if after in consultation, sorry, with the authority, because we must take into consideration Section 8 of the Electronic Communications Act. We must. And so the minister will, of course, talk to the authority about it, look at what the authority wants, and then instruct the Interco to comply with the to submit the necessary information to the authority to deal with it and to publish it as we see goes of the EPA. So Chairperson, those are issues that we are taking into consideration. Let me say to you, Chairperson, if this is a purely economic matter, then the question of whether we need to license Interco would arise. Notwithstanding the provisions of Section 192, I did indicate to you that it was a matter that we had considered and that we had debated in the office, but we had not had an issue to discuss it at length with DPE or DOC, given the urgency of the matter. And so we have made the assumption in certifying this bill that yes, it is a licensing matter which falls within the ECA, and we looked at it from that provision, or from that perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. Do people want to respond to this?
I'm very clear.
What we should do is that, you see, partly Enzo, what we are seeking to do was a lot of people here, what they actually did was, a lot of people objected to process, right? They understood, a lot of their input was pretty much on the arguments that you presented. And in a way, it would have been much more helpful to us if it had been made earlier. But nevertheless, it's of value because it's giving us a keener perspective, a sense of what the issues are. As far as the two issues I wanted to raise that you said, is it a licensing issue or an economic issue? Personally, I would like to see with you outside this meeting what the full implications of that are. We'll leave that for now. But secondly, what we would like is for, you know, we raised this last week with due respect. We've only got like 2 weeks left. And we would like somebody to be allocated consistently, relatively senior, consistently to the meeting. 2 weeks and it's over, hopefully. If we can't resolve the issue by 14th of September, then, as I explained, it can't pass through both houses, and then we've got lots of time. You see, we will not pass this bill on the 14th of September, as I keep saying, unless all the issues are sorted out. So it can deepen the interest to get everybody, you know, outside the committee meeting, agreeing. So if we can get the state law authorities also to give us a name of one for the ruling to work with us for 2 weeks, then even in the preparation meetings we'd like the person to be present. From Parliament side they have said you introduce a big are you two of you gonna come or just one of you? Both of you. Okay. Well, both of you will have to come as well. So that we can sort this out outside the formal and we report back to the committee. Okay. Then the issue of process remains, right? If it goes to cabinet next Wednesday, then yet again it's good that the senior chief sector advisor is here. We really have to ensure that it's certified very quickly and so on. That also is yet another reason why we're valuable for somebody from your office to be involved as from tomorrow with the licensing issues that remain. But let's say it goes to the cabinet next Wednesday, then you've spoken to the communications committee already that this will come. It's a one-line vote. Now, obviously, this one line is not in conflict with a whole lot of clauses in the vote, presumably. Because then that committee doesn't have to like look at every clause and check. So even before cabinet approves of the text, if the cabinet committee appears tomorrow, you can also, we can have joint meeting with Comrade Godfrey, or somebody from the committee apart from Comrade Corona, and process it. So that, you see, what we want to be sure about is we can't vote on this bill unless we're absolutely clear what's in the ECA Amendment Act. So, you know, we can't do that. So, there's a process issue we can take further. Apart from that, is there anything else that we need to say? No? Okay, can we move on to the next issue, which is Centec? Now, very quickly, I see our colleague, Mr. Dubé, is here from Centec. We haven't had a study group. We are meeting this afternoon, but hey, we can speak freely. If people disagree, they can say it. But the sense I have, Mr. Dubé, is that, I don't know your first name, what is it?
Singale,
is actually that essentially what the department is saying, right? If I can just summarize for the committee, what are they saying? Very clear, there's 5 areas of difference between Centec and Infraco. The first is Centec focuses on wireless, Infraco and fiber optics. You will correct me if I've misunderstood what you're saying. Point 2 is Centec is focused on tier 2, Infraco is focused on tiers 1 and 3. So there ain't direct competition. Thirdly, Centec is broadcasting, Infraco is telecommunications, right? Broadband, basically. Fourthly, Infraco, I mean, Centec is focusing on short-term issues, Comrade Quinn, on digitization of broadcasting and on the rollout of the 2010 league. Whereas, Infraco is focusing on media and long-term projects of national interest, SKA and so on, right? Now, the argument of GPE is that in the UK it took 10 years to digitize. South Africa is trying to do this in 3 compressed years. And the argument of GPE is that no single enterprise can run huge multiple interventions, as they put it, digitization and broadband penetration and so on. That Centec is fundamentally a broadcasting signal distribution company. that if you look at the budget allocated by DOC last year to Semtech, it makes it very clear its main task is the provision of broadcast signal distribution. And additional funds over the MTM period are to accelerate rehabilitation and digitization of broadcast signal distribution infrastructure. And the argument is that if you look at the annual report of Semtech, 75% of its expenditure is on broadcast networks and only 25% on what is called multimedia and telecom. Then DPE looked at Semtech's delivery and showed that it's not actually in rural areas. And Semtech seemed to agree because they didn't challenge that. And one doesn't need to be very high in the pyramid to challenge facts like that. So I take it that Semtech agreed with that. ICA said, for what it's worth, that Semtech is arguably the most comprehensively licensed telecommunications entity in South Africa. Harris, that's your words, is that right? Those are your words, is that right? For the submissions on the 2nd or 1st of August? You weren't listening, obviously. That's fine, doesn't matter. That's what you said. At least that's what you told, that's what DP tells us you said. So, that's the argument. Now, quite frankly, unless Semtech is going to come up with an overwhelmingly strong argument, I think that issue is resolved.
Yes.
We understand now, as we didn't on August 2, the distinct and different and hopefully complementary roles. In our report to Parliament, we want to engage with Semtech, where we say, hey guys, give us a paragraph or two, we'll look at it, so that we encourage complementarity. We encourage cooperation. You're both state-owned entities and so on. You asked in your submission, if I recall, will InfraCo need any of our services or infrastructure and so on? We'll come back to those things later. But in short, as far as the policy issue is concerned, are we clear that they have distinct and separate roles and that, yes, indeed, we do need an InfraCo? Anybody disagree? No. I think if you can't speak anymore because you haven't got
higher up on the program.
I speak for the host. You can. Oh, sorry, before we decide, Frank, you
want
to say something?
I just want to say, cancel the 2020 Visas Act.
Yeah. Can we have some silence, please, yeah?
What essentially is the case is that there has been a revolutionary change in terms of technology and service neutrality.
Lots of revolution in the air. By the way, he's Paris, can I tell you something? This man is a bit outdated. He still talks of two phases. The Communist Party has moved on.
So you can use any kind of platform to produce, to deliver any kind of sense.
Yeah.
You are not prescribed.
That's right.
In terms of the electronic community. So, Semtech can provide multimedia services, voice, video, data, broadcasting and everything. So, it will not be precluded in terms of the act. It's up to them to decide in terms of what they prefer to focus on. But the sense that you come and say, I want an electronic communication network service to provide telephony, to provide broadcasting, to provide internet. For instance, we have DVDH. We are using a cell phone to do broadcasting. What do you call that? Converged services and all that. And you can even use this for internet services. So in that particular respect, it behooves of them to decide how to share distribution of duties, as to whether they will concentrate on that, but they can use any kind of platform to provide any service, be it broadcasting, be it telephony, be it video, be it data, and any kind of service. So I just wanted to
clarify that
from where we stand. We are service and technology neutral.
Yeah,
we're not saying we'll provide only telephony or only broadcasting.
Yeah, they made that clear.
That's what they're
doing. You want to respond?
That's what I say on the paper.
It's a few Mondays.
Sorry?
And I think that's from the issue. But what I also thought that I said, if it's still on the report that you could use, the Committee of the Strategic Parliament, in terms of the ECA, what Center is providing at the moment and what Infarco is providing is the same. They'll be giving individual student communication as a writer. But the decision on the services is a shareholder decision.
Yeah. Is that what? Is that
the shareholder?
Yeah.
It's
not
something
that's right. Yeah, no. In fact, I was going to say that you applied the tariff, which you've covered me.
Yeah.
Of course, the fundamental difference also is that Semtech is 3D.
Okay.
And at this stage, from what we can tell, at least from what we read, it's a 2. Yeah, schedule. So that's also a fundamental difference in their capacity to borrow,
who the accounting officer is, reporting, and so on. We're going to come to scheduling later. Okay? So, having said that, Mr. Dubey, you got nothing to say now.
Well,
second,
I just wanted to say that
so well
I spoken.
Yeah.
And
you beat the press.
And when it comes to rural issues, the Minister of Communications budget post pieces always said subscription
to. Yeah, but you still haven't done that sufficiently from what DPE says, and you're going to do that. And hopefully the portfolio of community communications will monitor that.
I do not know whether the DPE is correct.
Okay. They are? They are incorrect. That means you know that they're not correct. They're incorrect. I must be clear. This is Parliament, okay? Your relationship with your shareholder obviously defines what you can and can't say at some level. But if somebody says that your office is in Pietermaritzburg and St. Lucie, and your head office is in Joburg, you can't say, no, I can't say anything until the shareholder agrees. It's a factually incorrect thing. So you're basically, you see, we are more or less drawing to a close insofar as the dialogue is concerned. The other thing is complete, but, so if there are factual inaccuracies, then you're obliged, even to your shareholder, to correct it. So basically, can you give us information? Very soon. Not that it's going to alter our policy decision, that there's a distinct and separate role, notwithstanding some of the challenges of what Paris and Vasila says arise. And that's finally a shareholder management issue. The committee needs to be informed. So can you reply to that one slide up there, which is one page whatever, you know it, and just say that's not true. We need to know what's not true. If anything else that's not true, you must give it to us in writing, or say it now if you like. Or consult with the shareholder on what you can and can't say in writing. But, you know, we need to know. Sorry, you want to take on Yeah, okay, so basically you're telling us it's not true that you're focusing almost wholly or primarily on urban areas, and that apart from the places mentioned here, which are small towns and cities, you are indeed there in the rural area. And you will give us that information by Monday morning. Good. Okay, anything else you want to say? This is Parliament.
You are protected here.
No, we provide all the
information. No, outside.
You provide all the information. I hope it's not something fundamentally new that we're going to call all of them back. Is there something fundamentally new? I prefer you say it now. Presumably you got a mandate since last week.
Yes. They will never introduce new issues.
All right. So then.
Hammer the drum on the 10th of
June. Okay.
The issue of tier 1 and tier 3 and tier 2 will show that.
It's more complex. What's incorrect? That you're focusing on tier 2 and they're focusing on tier 1.
Yes.
Explain a bit quickly, because I mean that's quite important. I just summarized the argument.
Well, according to the diagram that they gave, they said tier 2 and tier 3 simply means it's
a tier 3. No. Okay, let him finish, please. He hasn't spoken, it's not fair. He's spoken all the time. Quickly. Page 9. Page 9, comrade French, page 9.
What that means is, according to that definition, tier 2 is less for an active network.
Yeah.
And that is where Center for the thing.
Yes.
What we are saying is incorrect to say, you know, this is the where Center has over the years been trying to see. So they will bring the documentary to Center for that thing on Monday as the Center for the Department.
Could you have it sooner? I mean, you got the information. Can't you have it within 24 hours?
Really
48 hours. Friday is the thing you'd like to perform. Okay, so
they've got the capacity to say, maybe we're meeting tomorrow afternoon, it'll be useful to have something.
Alright, so can I summarize it like this? At this stage, unless DPE's argument is shown to be substantially empirically inaccurate and suspect for the policy positions it's taken, and if Temte can convince us otherwise, we take it that we're going ahead with this bill, that in fact we have a clear and distinct role, and we will in our report note the things we said, Mashila and Paris, that there are some issues that have to be addressed, and there's two committees, you know, the other committee is serving, and this committee will monitor things. Okay? A lot will go into the report that we can't cover in the bill. Okay, having said that, is there anything else on sentence?
will be useful to get a statement from the shareholder also as to what they expect of Sempec going forward.
We can look into that. But it's also a matter of communication to deal with what policy was. But we use for yeah, let's look into that. Okay. Rashida will think about it. She's looking a bit troubled at the moment. But we can speak to our president immediately. Okay. Anything else? No. In that case, it's 10 to 1 or whatever. What is it? 10 to 1. Firstly, give me a huge round of applause for finishing 10 minutes early.
Point two
is that look, given that we've come to where we have, and given the way things are panning out, it means our program needs to change slightly. So let's give a process. One, tomorrow morning. Do we really need to meet at 10 anyway? Because we're so close at 9.
Let's start. Leave it at 10.
Yeah, let's leave it at 10 because it gives us a bit of time to cover our notes. Well, I'm here only a few minutes to 9. But it gives you an hour to work on things. Can we meet at 10? Because I thought we'll resolve the licensing issue tomorrow. But that's not going to happen. Okay, so can we meet at 10? And can we deal with the specific, we go clause by clause, for Wane and Wong will take over from tomorrow. We go through clause by clause, the issues around which, the amendments around which there's already agreement, consensus. We'll be able to do that by tomorrow. So here it is. We start going through clause by clause, so the two combinations start sharing from tomorrow. Okay, I will sit here that you guys take over. Can we have an email to us tonight? Is that possible? Because both of them got email. It's very important now. You will be. Although you are. Moscati will brief you, sorry, when you were not around.
All the provisions with the exception of the mountain.
Okay. So the second thing is. At 10 o'clock tomorrow. When you email Bonani gets everything, and then Bonani sends it to
S26 tomorrow morning.
It's S26 tomorrow, which is not substantially better, but it's certainly better than this. Okay, then the next thing is, Bonani, can you get the names and email addresses of the lawyers concerned?
So that the lawyers are on board all the time. Yeah, because it's really detailed. Okay.
Then, tomorrow afternoon, whatever happens in cabinet, let's meet the three coaches, 1, 2, 3, with the department concerned and the lawyers. The lawyers can be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a subcommittee meeting. We will report back to the portfolio committee on Friday. Friday we meet from 9 to whatever time. Okay. And then we need to get, the other element is to get Godfrey Oliphant on board. I will also speak to him again, so will Mashila and whoever else. And public for one of those. Okay, where's the lunch?
No worries.
You will just on the second floor.
No. Lunch?
Yeah, because it's completion. Now, finally, for those of you who are flying in from Jodhpur and so on, I cannot prescribe to you, but it doesn't seem reasonable to me for you to come, unless, you know, the deeply suspicious of us, to come tomorrow and Friday. But you are free to contact the committee secretary once the text of the amendment comes through the committee. Can you send it to all of them? They have the right to have a look at it. They're public documents. So you can confer with the committee secretary and you can get the documents from him or her. And then if you can post one of us, Comrade Kawane, Comrade Guam and myself, it's not productive for you to come. Thank you. Unless you have a local Cape Town based person. But that's your decision. Okay? Thank you very much. There's a meeting at 3:30 here, as you know.